The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
More employers are talking about it. They're taking steps to improve it. More employees care about the companies they work for doing just that. We're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Our next guest is working with other companies when it comes to DEI. Julie Kaufman is Chief Diversity Officer at Bain & Company. As such, she oversees the company's global diversity, equity, and inclusion practice, and she joins us on the phone in Chicago. Julie, nice to have you here with us. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Carol. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I keep thinking the summer's going to get quiet, and I keep getting fooled. It's not. Tell me how busy you've been in terms of your practice.
You know, it's been crazy busy, just like you were describing there. I think that the floods were unleashed a little bit, obviously, with all the events of 2020. First, of course, the pandemic, but then after the murder of George Floyd and a number of other events around racial hatred, a lot of companies started asking themselves, what do we need to be doing differently around the topics of diversity, equity, and inclusion to try and create more space, more opportunity for all talents across the board? And that has kept us quite busy, both internally and working with our clients on actions to take to try and really move the needle on outcomes.
What's the typical situation, Julie, when you work with a client that you walk into? What are the problems? What's the think that or corporate think that needs to change? Give me some ideas.
You know, I think there can be a variety of situations, but often leadership has identified that there's a gap. There's a gap somewhere. It could be in representation, whether or not they're having talent of diverse backgrounds represented in the workforce and on their leadership team in sufficient numbers. It can be a gap in lived experience, whether or not the employees, again, of different backgrounds, races, gender, et cetera, are having the same experience and are feeling the same sense of belonging, support, and trust in the organization. And so often what we get is a leadership team that says, we know we have an issue, we know we have an opportunity, but we're not sure what actions we can take. We're not sure where to start, and we're not sure necessarily what are some of the best things we can do to try and move the needle. And some of the work that we put out in this recent paper around some proven actions that we know can change the outcomes around both retention, recruitment, as well as overall employee sentiment, are things that we're working with employers on today and our clients to try and really make a difference. Step by step. It's a long journey, by the way. It's
right.
Not something that you change overnight, but you got to get started somewhere.
Well, and it's funny that you say that because I think about in the last year and a half or so, right, coming off of the pandemic, coming off of George Floyd, how many conversations we've all had about, wait a minute, the injustices in society, the inequities, it's not new, folks. It's been around for a long time. We're talking about it, though, it feels like in a different way, but enough of talk. Let's take steps and actions to change it.
Exactly. I think that's the sentiment of many, not just the broader population base. As you mentioned, people care about this more and more, and they're selecting their next role when they're talking with the companies they work for. But leaders themselves are saying, enough of the talk. Well, how do we take some actions that can make a difference? And so in this most recent report that we put out, we tried to talk through 10 actions that we think have real evidence and research behind them that really move, that change the outcomes, as I mentioned, on things like recruitment and things like retention. And so some of the specific actions in particular that can make a difference are around, first of all, having real C-suite commitment and accountability. That means having real leadership identified as accountable for these outcomes, sharing some of your information, being more public with your aspirations and your goals, but also allotting resources, allocating resources, to differing ways of both changing the way we recruit, changing the way we talk with one another, changing the way we think about our next assignments, et cetera.
Right.
And I can talk a little bit more about a few practices in a few moments.
Well, and what's interesting too, well, talk to us about those practices and tell us specifically, you know, tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah, maybe I'll just pick at least one to start.
Good.
With, Carol.
Yeah.
Around this idea of talent acquisition. I think so many people say, okay, well, how do I try and get more talent here in my organization of different backgrounds? And so one of the things we've been talking a lot about is adopting a skills-first approach to talent acquisition. so often we have credentials in place. You need a 4-year degree to do this. You need 10 years experience to do this. But instead of focusing on those credentials, which do not always equate to actually being successful in a job, if we can be a little bit more skills first as a clear way to mitigate this these exclusionary practices. So you can think about folks that might have demonstrated coding skills or demonstrated different skills in operational settings, and being able to address, look for those, put your recruiting apparatus looking for those, and looking for partnerships mm-hmm. around talent supply organizations in different cities and geographies, where you can really start to get a flywheel going of finding folks with the skills you need, and then being able to have success and then helping you grow that talent base over time.
Right. Go to different pools, right? We keep hearing that over and over. Don't keep going to the same places to recruit if you really want to mix things up. Having said that, how important is it when a company is recruiting that their C-suite, their board, and I'm obviously talking about publicly held companies here at this point, but I mean, private companies have boards as well too. But I mean, how important is it that from the top down, you're seeing diversity, inclusion? It's, you know, you've got to walk the talk.
Absolutely. It couldn't be more important, actually. You're right onto something. And first of all, it has to be present in the representation in that boardroom and in that C-suite. And where there are gaps in diverse representation, there has to be clear focus on ways in which you're going to build that pipeline over time with succession planning. In particular, though, we also look for those boards and those management teams to set clear aspirations and goals, to be publicly talking about what those goals are, and then creating usually some sort of oversight body. It can be a subcommittee of the board, it can be a task force, it can be a council, but it's a group of leaders that are truly empowered to not only set out those aspirations, but to take those actions and be held accountable for progress on the various areas of improvement the company has set out in front of it. And I think staying really communicating well and transparently mm-hmm. to your organization internally and to your customers externally is quite important along this multi-year journey.
Julie, what gives you hope that something's going to be different this time around? And forgive me, I'm a very optimistic person. I believe in change. I've seen changes happen. But safe to say, it's pretty upsetting that we're still talking about diversity, inclusion, you know, after decades of supposed, you know, everybody understanding that there are problems out there and supposed to be working to make it changes, you know, to make it better.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, Carol, it's the right push. And I am optimistic by nature as well. And I'm really optimistic this time because of the way I hear my colleagues and our clients talk about this. I think there's been an awareness growth of the true inequities in our society, but that there are things that the corporation can do. Whereas maybe 10, 15 years ago, too often we look towards governments or not-for-profits to fill these, you know, to fix these problems, to address these gaps. And now we're saying, look, if we have a racial wealth gap in this country, the corporations are the ones with the jobs. We have to take action to make a difference. And I'm so proud for us to be a founding member of the 110 Coalition as an example of a group of companies, over 50, that have come together now and made a pledge that we're going to hire 1 million Black Americans over the next 10 years into family-sustaining wage jobs with real career growth, and they're not going to require a 4-year degree. It's a commitment to skills-based hiring. It's a commitment to career pathing and advancement to Black Americans as a way to really make meaningful progress on the wealth gap. And we've got, like I said, 50 blue chip employers that have made that commitment and are working now on listing those jobs in the various communities. And we're working on talent partnerships in those communities to sort of have that pathway of different groups of talent with the right upskilling opportunities to be ready for these jobs and to take advantage of these opportunities.
So I'm doing some quick math. You said 1 million Black Americans over 10 years, 50, I think, blue chip companies or companies that are involved in this. So that, I think, works out to 2,000 Black Americans a year. I mean, could we not do this faster? And if we can't, why?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, look, this is one coalition of, I think there are going to be many that are formed. There's a number of other coalitions out there in New York City themselves.
But you know what I'm getting. You know what I'm getting to. It's.
Yeah. But the thing about.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
No. Please go.
I was going to say the reason we can't go faster. First of all, I think we can and we should push faster. But we have to realize that talent acquisition is just the beginning. What you really need is to also shape the culture, shape the environment, ensure that this talent will be successful in the organizations that it joins. That means creating different levels of mentorship, sponsorship, career growth opportunities, and real focus on the lived experience for a group of individuals that may not walk in the door right off the bat trusting their employer or believing they have a sense of belonging the way other groups that see themselves more in the majority, like their leadership team, might feel that way. So it takes investments over time to both get the new talent or the existing talent in seat and then grow into the leadership roles and keep that flywheel going. So I think that the worst thing we could do is rush and try and over-recruit beyond the organization's ability mm-hmm. to maintain and create an environment where that talent can thrive.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, you do talk about, I know you shared some notes with us, but about mentoring and sponsorship programs. How early does that need to start to really make it effective and make a difference?
You know, honestly, I think it can't start too soon. We think about it inside Bain, and a lot of our clients are doing the same with from that moment of offer, who is that person that's really connected with that individual and acts as that first colleague or friend and can help them understand the organization, navigate the decision process, and then when they start their job, be there to help them understand the lay of the land, whether we're remote or in person, but when the office, how that works, how the different norms and communication styles work. And then over time, I think this has to transition into more of a coaching, mentoring relationship where someone in more of a leadership role in their function, in their business unit, in their division, takes a specific interest in helping that person navigate career choices and growing further into their job. So I think it's too late if you wait till the third promotion before we say, oh, yes, we should mentor you even more. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that starts at the ground up and creates what we like to call a ring of support for this talent as they're arriving. And it just grows and evolves over time as the needs of the person evolve.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
We're talking with Julie Kaufman. She's Chief Diversity Officer, Head of Global Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Bain & Company, still with us on the phone from Chicago. Julie, what I do wonder, too, when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion, you work with clients across a lot of industries and regions. Are there variations when it comes to the industry or variations when it comes to the region when it comes to DEI needs or problems?
Absolutely. I think there are variations based on the mix in the community. So from a regional standpoint, you might have parts of our country that there's more of a Latinx population, parts of the country where there's more Asian American population, or the mix may change for that. And then in industries, for sure, both functional types, you know, engineers in one industry versus you have more artisans in other industries, perhaps more manufacturing jobs in some places and more white collar in other places. So you have to flex these different tools, if you will, these different actions to meet the needs of the population. But the thing that is common, in my experience anyway, across industries and regions, is the importance of listening and the importance of really understanding the lived experience of your employees, especially those from underrepresented backgrounds, such that you can then understand where there are gaps and understand opportunities to sort of provide more support, whether it is in the spirit of coaching and mentoring that we were just discussing. Maybe it's training. Maybe it's career pathing, but maybe it's also just better communications around the performance management processes or the growth processes at your company. But there is no substitute for really understanding the differences in lived experience across different populations at your company and then putting together action plans to try and move that forward to a place where folks are really thriving in their roles.
Julie, do you think we need to put it back into effect quotas? We've argued, or some of our team on the opinion side have argued and reported on how quotas have helped in terms of bringing more women into the workplace. What's your take in terms of quotas when it comes to minorities?
Yeah, quotas, like so many words, is a loaded term. And
I know.
In some ways it creates these antibodies, which is a topical term as well, I guess, these days among COVID. But, you know, we've thought about it more like goals than quotas. We've thought about progress versus absolutes, right? Like my strong belief is that if we're talking to a client, we're talking a lot about how diverse is your leadership team, how diverse is your workforce, and do they mirror one another? What you should be aspiring to is, of course, a workforce that mirrors the customers you serve or the communities you reside in, and a leadership team that mirrors that workforce. And if we can start to get those ratios more in line and there's less gap and we can grow the talent that way, I think that's an effective approach as opposed to setting absolute numerical targets, which can always be subject to reasons that they're difficult in a given industry, given community, et cetera. So my own personal view is to stick to things like the right goals and aspirations. Now, one thing I will say, though, is I really believe in the importance of measurable outcomes and metrics. And it can be progress forward. It can be mix-oriented. It can be ratios, as I just talked about. But I do think you need tangible, measurable outcomes that you are holding yourself accountable to and talking about your progress or gaps to getting there.
You know, it's interesting. Our Lisa Abramowitz, one of the hosts of Bloomberg Surveillance on Bloomberg Radio and Bloomberg TV, she's got Bloomberg Opinion column that's out on the Bloomberg, and she's specifically talking about the wealth gap and what the Fed does or doesn't do in terms of perpetuating it. And she's saying, you know, the Fed decries a wealth gap that it helps perpetuate, and the longer the central bank continues ultra easy monetary conditions, the more the richest families benefit disproportionately. How can bodies like the Federal Reserve help in this process?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've seen that piece, actually. I think she's terrific.
She is terrific.
It's not my area of expertise, you know, to be completely honest with you, in terms of Federal Reserve, but I do think that...
But you know what I mean, in terms of bigger policies by something like the Fed or policymakers.
Yeah, well, like in, you know, the Child Care Act or the you know, ability to try and get kids out of poverty, ability to help families have support such that they can then be working in the workplace, but at the same time not worrying that they're going to have their kids not have the care they need. I think those are important steps. And I think in general, thinking about ways that companies that are meeting certain goals or providing more support to those employees, you know, maybe there's creative ways from a policy standpoint that we're helping those organizations have stimulus to do those types of things. But I do think that this is a place where private sector, public sector, need to work together, and the not-for-profits have a role to play as well. This is a systemic, multi-generational problem, as you said well before, Carol.
Yeah.
So it's going to take all of these different aspects of our society to come together and try and make differences here.
You know, what's interesting, Julie, I don't know if you saw this. This was a story in Bloomberg Business Week, and it was a profile piece of Laura Murphy. She's former director of the ACLU, legislative officer. She's a pioneer of the corporate civil rights audit, which is a new tool for getting companies to really confront their role in perpetuating racial disparities. She spent 2 years auditing Facebook. She's a senior advisor to Airbnb. What, you know, internal or external controls do you and Bain, or do you think companies have to confront, you know, a firm or a company or institution's role in perpetuating those racial disparities? Because sometimes they're there without individuals really know it, right? We talk about bias in data. So I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I love that. And I think those are super important. Like, if you think about the way our regulatory and our financial system works, right? Everybody is, there's a defined set of terms that we do when we report our financials as a corporation, right? There's revenue, there's cost, there's the gap accepted metrics. And yet what we don't have on the topic that you just talked about here with racial equity, if you will, is an accepted way to talk about what does good look like and what doesn't it look like and what's the right audit, that we have a language and we can start to hold folks accountable. I think we need outcomes metrics as well as process metrics that can demonstrate this is what good looks like, and you as a company should be certified, if you will, or at least have a report card on where you're doing well and where you're falling short. And there's a number of those sorts of audits in things like the environment and climate, other places. I think it needs to be in this area as well, that we should really come together and try and agree on a tool set and a set of outcome metrics like you're describing to help companies know where they stand.
Right.
And where they need to improve.
You know, it's interesting because I do feel like, you know, we talk a lot about ESG. I know these are things you're familiar with and other things, you know, companies are paying attention to that too. But unless we have the metrics to really measure it, I'm a numbers person.
Yep.
And so I know not everything you can put a clear number on it, but the more we can clearly define what ESG is or DEI is, the better we can move towards it as a goal.
100% agree. I think if you don't have goals that you can measure, and we talk about this at Bain a lot, that we have got to have a tangible way to define the success, a number or set of numbers that can measure how far we are from that, and then a mechanism for getting into the root causes of why is it not moving or why is it not moving as quickly as we'd like, and how do we start to address those root causes to get at that outcome that we've all agreed is the right one to measure. And absent a more globally or countrywide established set of metrics, it's going to be left to each company to define their own. And part of what we're hoping with this research paper and others is to start to have a basis of conversation of could we develop a more standard set of outcomes that more companies would utilize, and then we might be able to have this dialogue in a different fashion, as you suggest.
One last question. So I'm thinking about our audience that's listening. It's a bunch of business leaders, organizational leaders, an investment audience. I mean, if they need to go back to their institution and really think about their DEI policies, what would be one first big step that you would say that they need to do?
Yeah, I think the most important first step is to take stock, right? Take stock of where are we today? Are we talking about this? Do we have a common definition of what we think good looks like? And do we have an aspiration and a goal? And do we know how far we are from that? And until we as a leadership team agree that this is a core agenda, strategic imperative item, and we have a shared understanding of where we are and where we would wish to be, and we know how to define that gap, we are going to have a hard time with this conversation. So step one is for sure understanding and assessing a starting point. And then right after that is exploring if any of these key actions that I started to mention here and that are more in the paper that we just released, are you doing those things or not? It's a quicker way to at least start getting after and learning from the experience of others and sort of take stock of where are we and what can we do differently? Because this is a time for action, not just talk. And we need to get moving forward on trying things that we know work.
All right, going to leave it there. Julie, thank you so much. Julie Kaufman, she's Chief Diversity Officer, Head of Global Diversity, Equity, Inclusion over at Bain & Company, the consulting company, and joining us on the phone from Chicago. Some great deep dives for us with Julie, as well as with Kathy Wood and some others here on the Tuesday edition of Bloomberg Business Week.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.